I do feel that it is part of my role as a doula to advocate for my clients. I do not think it takes away their voice as long as I have permission from my clients to speak up for what they'd want and desire in their birth space. Welcome to the podcast where we get into the real and raw of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. My name is Hannah Gill. I'm a VBAC mom, doula, and birth educator. And I help women discover their options and harness their inner power to have the experiences they desire. I'm here to support you through the ebbs and flows of these transformative years so we can have open and honest conversations about the hard, the messy, and the beautiful parts of motherhood. This is the Ebb and Flow Birth Show. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Ebb and Flow Birth Show. This is episode number 9, and it is another Q&A episode. So I will get right into the questions for this week. The first question says, I am breastfeeding as well as pumping. When I nurse, I can tell my daughter is getting a lot of milk by the way she swallows, but when I pump, I am barely getting anything. Is this a sign of a low supply? So I am not a lactation consultant. I have minimal lactation training and information from my doula training and obviously my own breastfeeding experiences, but I will say to know for sure, you need to see a lactation consultant. So I can't give lactation advice from that perspective, but I can go off my own personal experience. This doesn't sound like a low supply to me, since you can tell your daughter is getting a lot when she nurses. There could be various reasons why you're not getting a lot of output while pumping. And the main things I can think of are pumps are generally not as effective as having baby at the breast. So that could be one reason. And you could also be using the wrong flange size. So the majority of pumps come with 2 standard size flanges, but these are not always going to be the right size that fits your breast. Like I said, you could work with a lactation consultant, or there are some measuring tools that you can find by like Googling, like flange measuring tool or breast pump flange measurements. There's different tools you can use to measure that are available online as well. But again, please see a lactation consultant for any breastfeeding or pumping concerns. Question number 2, I want to start a local birth podcast for birth workers in my area, but I'm not sure where or how to get started, especially for marketing it to the local community. How did you handle that with your podcast? So as far as starting a podcast, I had no clue where to start with a podcast, and I didn't want to just search Google and YouTube for hours, because at this point in my life, I just don't have time to do that. So I actually took a podcasting course from Crystal Prophet called Prophet Podcasting. It covers everything from coming up with your podcast idea and name to marketing and monetizing if desired. And she also now offers monthly live coaching calls to her students, which I love. So I actually became an affiliate of the course because I loved it so much. And you can find out more about it if you're interested in taking a course. I have a bit.ly link because the affiliate link was really long, but it's bit.ly/EFBS, like Ebb and Flow Birth Show. So EFBS podcast, bit.ly/EFBS podcast. You can find out more about it there. It's an awesome course. I really liked it. But if you don't want to take a course, I also use Buzzsprout as my host for my podcast. And there's a lot of extremely helpful information on their website as well, which is just buzzsprout.com. They have like blogs and things you can look at for how to get started with podcasting. And you can also look on YouTube and Google, obviously. As far as marketing it to the local community, you could always create a website, an Instagram page, a Facebook page specifically for your podcast, and basically optimize your website for SEO. And then on Instagram and Facebook, use like local hashtags and share to any local groups or pages that are also on social media. So really like push your podcast that way. If you are focusing specifically on local, especially for birth workers, you could look and see if there's a local birth worker community in your area. So in my area, there are all the doulas are very close in communication. We have a Facebook group, a group chat that we communicate in regularly. So networking and reaching out to other local birth workers, anywhere that birth workers would be at, like birth centers, and then also just like local coffee shops and stuff. You can, if places let you put out flyers or information, those are other great ways to spread the word in your local community. But I would say the biggest ones that have been beneficial for my podcast are my website and my social media. Those are definitely the way to go as far as spreading the news about your podcast. And then reach out to people. So if it's for birth workers, then reach out to other fellow birth workers to see if they want to be on the podcast, and then use that as a way to connect with them, as well as give them a chance to like promote their information as well. So it's forming a local community together. So that is what I would recommend. Again, I just started podcasting, so I'm not a podcasting expert by any means, but that's kind of the approach I would take. Question number three. As a doula, I've heard that we shouldn't advocate for our clients because it takes their voice away. How do you feel about this? So this can be an entire episode in and of itself, but I do not agree that we should not be advocating for our clients. But by advocating, this does not mean that we take over their voice or take over their power. This means we emphasize their voice and emphasize their power and what they want to happen in their birth, especially in a hospital setting where there's going to be pushback from multiple staff about certain things, and a mom may not be heard or listened to. This would be a place where doulas especially should be advocating for their clients and making sure that their birth wishes are upheld and respected. And obviously, there are going to be situations that are emergent where the birth plan goes out the window, but the mom and the partner and whoever can still be respected in that process and communicated with and not belittled or treated like a child. They can be communicated with in a very effective way, even in emergency situations. So I do feel that it is part of my role as a doula to advocate for my clients. I do not think it takes away their voice as long as I have permission from my clients to speak up for what they'd want and desire in their birth space. If my client tells me, "I don't want you advocating for me," then I'm going to respect that client's wishes, as hard as it would be not to advocate for my clients if they're in a bad situation. But I do believe that it is ultimately the mother and the family that needs to be respected. Their choices need to be respected, whether I agree with them or not. And I'm going to advocate for their choices and what they want out of their birth, regardless of the setting I'm in, whether I'm in the hospital or a home or a birth center. I do believe that is part of my role as a doula, as even though many doula agencies, or not doula agencies, doula certifying bodies and doula training programs say that we should not be advocating for our clients. I completely disagree with that. Okay, question number four. How do I help the appearance of my C-section scar? So this is going to depend on how far out from your C-section you are, but I would say for C-section scar healing, you could use things like there's like scar strips that can help fade the appearance of scars. There are also different creams and ointments you can use. I've heard of people putting breast milk on it. A tallow cream or a tallow balm is something else you could put on it. For me, I used like vitamin E oil. That's really all I used. And then I started using tallow just recently, even though I'm pretty far out from my C-section. I still put it on there. You never know if it's going to help. But for me, vitamin E oil was the best thing for helping it heal and remember that everyone's bodies are going to be completely different in how your scars heal. So yours is going to look drastically different from the person next to you. And as long as it's not like showing signs of an infection, it could still, as it heals, it may be discolored and it could fade over time. But just remember that it's going to heal differently. As far as like the a C-section shelf or like bulkiness on your scar, you could work with a pelvic floor therapist to do some fascia release and different types of work on your C-section scar. Don't do this until after 6 months, I believe, when the scar is completely healed. But after that, I would work with a pelvic floor therapist and work on any adhesions or different muscle issues that may be going on around your scar, which could contribute to the bulkiness of your scar. All right, that's it for this short, quick Q&A episode. Thank you guys for tuning in. Again, if you have any questions you want to submit for the podcast, you can go to my Instagram, you can DM me, you can email me, or you can go to ebbandflowbirthshow.com/question. Thank you guys for tuning in, and I'll see you next week. You just finished another episode of the Ebb and Flow Birth Show. For more, head over to ebbandflowbirthco.com or on Instagram at ebbandflowbirthco. As a reminder, this podcast is provided to you for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not a substitute for medical advice. Until next time, bye friends.